from stpetecatalyst.com.
Okay, welcome to Political Party with Adam Smith. We've got the some of the brightest lights in Florida politics, or at least Florida political journalism. I'll go. Now we've got Anna Cabala, who's really not looking so great these days.
No. The years have been, I've been in Florida for 3 years, and I already look like this.
No, this is Anna's better half. This is Matt Dixon from Politico, the ace. Steve Contorno from the Tampa Bay Times, and David Smiley from the Herald. Thanks for being here. David, let's start with you, because a lot of people are focused on Miami-Dade, and you guys have a new Miami poll you're reporting. How much trouble is Biden in Miami, where he really should be winning by a gazillion votes?
I mean, you know, in the story we posted this morning, we compared his numbers to Hillary Clinton, because that's the most recent election. But I don't know that it's a fatal problem for him if he's going to beat Trump by 20 in Miami-Dade County, which is what this poll published today by Ben Dixon and Amani International showed. You know, Gilliam and Bill Nelson, Andrew Gilliam, who ran for governor in 18, and Bill Nelson, the U.S. Senator, Democrat, who narrowly lost to Rick Scott in 2018, both got around 20 points. And you know, they lost, but they almost won. So Clinton, you know, blew the doors off Trump in Miami-Dade County in 2016, and she still lost. So, you know, destroying Trump in Miami-Dade County might, you know, that coalition may not necessarily be the right way for Biden to win. And there's evidence that he's doing better with different voting blocks in the state than with Cuban Americans, which Hillary Clinton did better with in 2016. And Trump has certainly boosted his numbers over the last couple of years. So, you know, he wants his numbers to be better in Miami-Dade County, but I don't know that when beating Trump by 20 is going to doom him.
So, Matt, when we're talking about the Florida polls, I think the Real Clear Politics average, I glanced at, Biden's up by 2 points on average. Do you buy the Florida polls? Should we trust the Florida polls, generally speaking?
No, I'm generally a loather of public polling in general. We'll write about them and give them attention because, of course, the trend lines are important. But 2.5 points would be a relative landslide in Florida. This is a 1-point state. I would, you know, sort of expect it to be right around there again. The Romney Obama race was roughly a little over a 2-point margin, and that was, you know, in recent history considered a wide margin. If even out in the midterms, outside of a presidential cycle, everyone kind of forgets there was 5 recounts in Florida just last cycle, 3 of which were statewide. So I know there's been kind of talk on the national talking head circuit about Florida knows how to count vote by mail ballots, so the huge spike might not be as impactful here. You know, sort of, you know, having a moment of reckoning for Florida elections. But I just kind of point back to folks, just last cycle, we had, you know, a wave of federal lawsuits. Rick Scott asked the state cops to investigate election law officials. There was 5 recounts. So I think there's, you know, all that stuff. It's going to be an interesting election, Ed, I guess, is the main bullet point of my rambling presentation here.
I got to say, I keep hearing that from Democrats, that if they really want to keep this clean and easy and have a clear result on election night, look to Florida and have a comfortable win in Florida election night. They seem to forget that we are home to Palm Beach and Broward County. We know how to screw things up.
I mean, I've heard that too, and I have no idea where that's coming from.
I mean, we do count our early votes early, but that's the difference. On election night, where are you going to be? What are the counties you're going to be looking at?
Obviously, you know, seeing how Biden does in South Florida is going to be really important. But, you know, whether he can run up the score in Hillsborough County.
So you'll be looking to South Florida. It'll be 3 o'clock in the morning. We'll be wondering when they're going to start counting the ballots. Yeah.
Okay. Right. But we're, you know, 4 years removed from when people thought Hillsborough was still a bellwether. And now it's been shifting pretty hard for Democrats. So is that a county where Democrats are going to suddenly run up the score? Or is it a place where, you know, Republicans might reel things back in a bit? I'm told that it's one of the two counties that they're really focusing a lot of their efforts on to try to not get blown out in. So
Trump is really focusing on Hillsborough?
Yeah. Yeah. They've brought the Hillsborough County GOP chairman to like the White House on several occasions. They're really making an effort, and he's gotten really embedded in their campaign. Pinellas County, obviously, as well, is, you know, that's a flip-flop county. It's gone it went Obama, then it went for Trump, then it went for Gilliam. is this going to be the bellwether, or is it going to be a county that suddenly takes off? And then also just so many votes in Duval County, and you know, Matt probably knows the area better than both of us, but it's definitely a place where Democrats feel like they could potentially win for the first time in a long time. And if that's the case, then, you know, we're going to see an interesting map, and this has been the trend over the last, you know, 20 years, but where there's a lot of blue in the cities and the rest of the state is red. It's just how blue are those cities?
What is going on? And you're a Duval expert of sorts, Matt. Is that one? That's the biggest swing county, really.
Yeah, I would say it's the biggest swing county. I mean, it went blue in 2018, as we all know. I think under normal elections, it would be fairly easy to conclude that it's going to go there again. But I'm very fascinated by this walk versus no walk, door knocking versus no door knocking, and the impact it's going to have. Did a fair amount of reporting earlier this month out of Duval, and the Duval GOP is kind of, their ground game is though it's non-pandemic. I mean, they're socially distancing, there's masks, but they have a door knocking program, and the Democrats do not there. I know that there's a broader dynamic there, but in Duval specifically, which is going to be really important in Florida and by default nationally, I'm interested to see how that is impactful. So I think Duval probably is turning a little bit bluer than it previously was, but there are some outside factors this year that I'm, you know, interested to watch.
I'm curious how you guys think of the ground game. I feel like the Trump folks feel very, I think both of them don't have much of a ground game, is my impression, but Trump's is better. I mean, what are you seeing down in South Florida, David?
Yeah, well, down ballot candidates have been door knocking for months, going back to July. And
both parties?
Yes, both parties. And they've talked about having a good experience with voters, that voters are opening their doors at twice the rate than they were in 2018, probably because so many of them are home, but they're opening their doors and they're talking to people. And I think the interesting thing is just, it seems very touch and go. The president just contracted coronavirus. If we have people suddenly, if we have a spike in Duval County because the president held a large rally there at the airport a couple of days ago, are the campaigns still going to want to go knocking on doors? Are people going to be more standoffish? I feel like sentiments are very wavy. They go up and down with the number of cases and the number of deaths and what they're seeing in the news and the urgency in terms of the voting. But it does seem like Team Biden and with a lot of help from Mike Bloomberg are intent on getting back to door knocking to try and reach those people who just are tuning out the TV ads and the stuff they see on Facebook.
So I'm skeptical. Just give me all your thoughts. I'm skeptical that Bloomberg money is going to make a difference. That Lord knows the Democrats would rather have $100 million than not have it, but the vast majority is going on to TV, which I don't think has a great deal of impact at this point in a campaign. Discussed.
I think like the closest comparison maybe is 2014, when Rick Scott very last minute put $15 million on TV and that worked for him there. The voter registration piece, I think I remain skeptical, you know, the Amendment 4 stuff, how that is going to be impactful. But, you know, if I'm running in Florida, it's really, especially this year, it's not a ground game state. It's a 10 expensive media markets. I get your point. I don't think it's a game changer. I mean, Tom Steyer spent, you know, lit $30 million on fire in South Florida his candidates didn't win the past two or three midterm cycles here. So it's not for sure a game changer, but I'd rather have it than not. This is a state where TV matters and it's really expensive to be on air.
And the thought is too, that the Bloomberg money will be spent smarter because he ran such a digitally savvy campaign and that got him all the way to, you know, Super Tuesday. but like Matt said, the difference is though that the money that Rick Scott flooded into the race, I don't know if there's a huge, what's the huge difference between a Senate race when you're doing that versus a governor's race versus a presidential race where the
candidate. I think everybody knows Donald Trump. And this is really, and to less extent, Joe Biden, even after his time in office, people don't know Rick Scott nearly as well.
Yeah, and he was combating some of the most negative headlines of any governor in the country, and he was up against that. Trump has been going up against that for 4 years too, but that hasn't really, you know, moved the needle with his base.
Do you guys, does Ron DeSantis, you know, generally the assumption is if you own the governor's office, that's going to be worth a couple points. How significant is DeSantis as a political ally for Trump, do you think, anybody?
I mean, DeSantis, you know, flinging open the state right before Trump tests positive for coronavirus. I mean, I kind of wonder if maybe Trump would have been better served by DeSantis if he were one of those people, maybe not doing necessarily what the president wants. I mean, maybe that'll be good for him. Seems like right now, like, this probably a net negative. One thing on the Bloomberg money, I think the Spanish language ads are what will matter on TV, because we've consistently seen that people who want to take their polls in Spanish are favoring Trump pretty heavily. And it's, you know, smaller sample size, one poll, but the Mendixon and Amani International poll in Miami-Dade County that we wrote about this morning did have Biden tied with Spanish dominant voters. So maybe that's a blip. Maybe it's a trend. I don't know. But I do think millions of dollars in Spanish language ads for Biden is going to help him.
On November 4th, or at least whenever we know what the result of this election is, after that, one of the great storylines in Florida is going to be which Florida Republican is the leading candidate for president. So the parlor game, I'll go with you, Matt, first. Who right now is best positioned to run for president next time? Is it Marco Rubio? Is it Rick Scott? Is it Ron DeSantis?
I always bet on the billionaire. That's just sort of, that's not even my rule with politics. It's my rule in life. So I would say, I mean, I think they all want to do it. I don't know who's well positioned at this moment in time. I think Governor DeSantis is obviously having some issues, you know, with the pandemic. But if I'm going to bet on someone this far out with, you know, no real infrastructure yet, it's going to be the guy who can pay his own way, at least, you know, through an early state.
We need a better word. There's a billionaire, and we need a word for like 100 millionaire, like Rick Scott is.
I think the poor is what we call them in this conversation with Rick Scott. Yeah.
What do you think? Where's Marco Rubio in the presidential race? In fact, where's Marco Rubio in politics now? He's just not that visible, is he?
What do you think? More lucky if he or more successful in 2022, four or whatever, if he was Secretary of State Marco Rubio for a couple of years.
Yeah, I think that's probably where he's pinning his hopes. But I mean, it's tweeting Bible verses and hoping to go where Steve just mentioned, I think, is probably Marco Rubio's plan at the moment.
You know, it's interesting. When I was still somebody and was covering politics, you know, there was the only figure in Florida politics on either party that had a vast network of passionate support was Jeb Bush. I don't know that there's somebody who's, you know, not going anywhere in the Republican Party nationally anymore, obviously. There's nobody really akin to that. Who among those three has the real grassroots network, do you think?
I mean, DeSantis won because of Trump's tweet and just like the moment. He wasn't especially good campaigner. He didn't have a groundswell of support and he hasn't done anything to sort of cultivate the donor class or the grassroots, other than, you know, being a close Trump ally for the last four years or whatever. So, you know, and Rick Scott doesn't necessarily have a lot of people who love him. He just has a lot of money and he's done the work. Rubio had sort of that built up for a while, it seemed like, or at least was trying to get to that point. Then he kind of like burned a lot of bridges though along the way. And I'm not sure where that leaves him going forward.
David, how much does it matter if Trump cannot do rallies in Florida in the remaining 4 weeks? How big a deal is that?
It matters a lot. I mean, he is the campaign. He's the party, and nothing moves the needle like Trump out there strutting his stuff and doing his thing. The TV ads can't replicate it. He gets a ton of earned media off of it, and he gets people excited. And, you know, and one thing I hear constantly, like in Miami-Dade County with Hispanic voters and people talking about you know, how can Joe Biden improve his numbers? A lot of the talk was he needs to get down and talk to people in the community face to face and show that respect, that Hispanic voters especially react well to the candidates coming and talking with them. Haitian American voters react well to a politician coming into town and meeting with them and showing that respect. And Biden is doing those things today. And ironically, Donald Trump is stuck at Walter Reed and unable to get out there the way he obviously wanted to. So I think it's a very big deal for his campaign. I mean, they seemed rudderless with Trump in the hospital, just his entire orbit. They didn't even know how to message correctly around him being ill. So it seems like this is a big problem for them until they can find a new normal. Who knows what's going to happen? I guess they're talking about maybe he'll get out of the hospital today. This whole thing is just very cloudy. And I think, you know, his chances in Florida take a big hit if he can't get back out.
In a few days, we're going to be saying, can you believe it was only this last week that Trump had, we've learned he had COVID? Because there's going to be some new monumental news. And speaking of that, I'll go to you, Matt. How different is it to be covering politics in this crappy pandemic situation?
Yeah, it's weird. Usually this time of cycle, I'm sick of rubber chicken dinner somewhere in the I-4 corridor listening to speeches in hotel ballrooms, and I'm sitting here talking to you from my living room. So it's the vibe is significantly different, not only from, you know, the logistics of campaigns like we talked about, but covering it. It's much more of a phone sport than following candidates around and sort of zigzagging the state. I am interested to see, I believe the Trump campaign was planning on doing some sort of Florida events, you know, like a normal, like, you know, from past times on election night. I'm interested to see if that still holds. So there's still a few things to watch and a few things to do, but everything about this is significantly different than, you know, any campaign cycle that I've ever been a part of.
Worse, Steve, do you think, is the journalism and the political reporting suffer when you can't be out and about?
I think because we all as an industry kind of did some self-reflecting after 2016, especially that we had, Anil from our newsroom had a lot of plans for how we wanted to cover 2020 differently. And a big part of that was talking to people and getting out into communities that we haven't covered in the past, either in our backyard or across the state. And obviously that hasn't been possible for most of this election season. So finding human voices and real people, you know, we didn't really want to be a poll dependent coverage going into this election. And that's been difficult when you can't get out in the public as much. So that's been the hardest part about it for sure.
David, so then has it been helpful to make a policy? You're only going to talk to political consultants instead of real people?
I totally agree with everything Steve just said. You know, we had the same conversations and the same conversations about all those conversations being moot when the pandemic happened. And I think we are really trying to get back out and talk to real people over the last couple of weeks now that the election's close and everyone's sort of venturing back out, COVID be damned. And I also think that's part of like the whole door knocking thing. We're just getting out and meeting people in person because there is a feeling that, you know, people are just sort of, you know, so eager to get out and have human to human interaction at this point. But I think for newspapers, I do think the coverage has suffered. Not, you know, one of the things that we have an advantage in bringing to people that, like, you know, CNN, the national outlets don't necessarily have, is to be in the community and offer like those intimate perspectives and provide a deeper context so that we're not, you know, we get a little worried about stereotyping of voting blocks as if all Cuban Americans vote for Donald Trump because they think there should be an embargo and sanctions against Cuba. And so I do think that I worry about the shallowness of the reporting from our coverage, and we want to try to do better than that. So that's a bit of a concern for me.
One of the things that's good about Matt's coverage is he doesn't just talk to consultants. He also talks to lobbyists.
Yeah, no, consultants are people too, man. Come on.
And sometimes fundraisers also. So
yeah, that's right. The trifecta. Quit giving my secrets up, Adam. Jeez.
What are you, like, if you were to do something in the next 4 weeks, I'll let you guys all finish up on this. What is one thing, well, without giving each other your own story ideas, what is one thing you hope to see, hope to do, hope to learn?
I'd like to to get a better sense of if the Democrats' pre-election day voting margins that we've seen are real and are going to be a thing moving forward, or if this is just, you know, I don't want to say fool's gold because you always want to have a lead, but to see if these leads get swamped on election day, or if this is a new thing for how Florida's electorate performs, and it's a real advantage for one side or the other.
I'll just chime in because I've been looking at the tweets and all of your daily updates on those, and I've thought, oh, what a I mean, it is fool's gold, I think, because we know Republicans are going to, more than ever before, by far, are going to turn out on election day without a doubt. So, of course, the Democrats are going to have
It's a 1-point state. We're like, you know, a bad storm in Duval County away from that mattering, though. So, you know, because the margin of error gets so much, you know, when you need to turn out the way they're going to need to turn out, your margin gets smaller. And that it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in my mind.
Yeah. Steve, what about you?
You know, I feel like every time I've come up with a plan during this whole election season, it's been thrown out the window within a week anyway. So I'm really interested to see if the reopening of the state and the steps that DeSantis has taken in the last couple of weeks, especially, lead to that sort of late in the game surge where, you know, suddenly there's a hot spots in South Florida and elsewhere that, you know, sort of scares people from voting or, you know, gives a new narrative. But who knows? It all could be moved. Trump could be back in the White House tomorrow, or Trump could be, you know, on his deathbed in a week. So it's I think, especially since in 2016, we still haven't reached the point in the race where the Access Hollywood video came out. So I think we all just have to sort of stay on our toes a bit for the final weeks here.
Yeah. David.
What's going to happen with the pandemic in late October, right? I mean, we know we expect Trump to kill it on election day, right? And I think the big question is by how much. That's going to decide the election, because we know Democrats are going to go in with a lead. Is Trump going to overperform that? But, you know, even though we know Republicans aren't as swayed by the coronavirus as Democrats are, what's going to happen with the pandemic around election day, around early in-person voting and election day? Are we going to see a spike? If we do, are people going to blame DeSantis? Are they going to blame Trump? How is that going to play out? That's been the story, the biggest story of 2020, obviously. So how is coronavirus going to affect the vote in the final days?
Well, thank you guys so much for putting up with me, and thanks for all of your great coverage. Really appreciate it.
From stpetecatalyst.com.